Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hi, Hub.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
An experienced NFL reporter with decades of experience.
670 The Score's NFL insider.
I put it propopolitely.com, my list of what I had been led to believe are the five top candidates this year for head coaching jobs. That was based on everybody I talked to around the league, and Matt Nagy was on that list.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Daily Herald.
I just spent 5.5 hours in a car with Hub, and
Well, that's bad enough.
Let me break it down for you. 3 was talking about politics, and about 2.5 was talking about his disdain for media night. So,
you know, yes.
Hub Arkish?
Doesn't get any better than this.
With Bernstein and Goff on 670 The Score.
The Bears are signing wide receivers, but it's not Allen Robinson. It's not Sammy Watkins. It's more familiar names. Here to talk about that and the market is the Scores football expert, Hub Arkish. He is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. He is the director of football content at Shaw Media, and he is the editor of Pro Football Weekly. Hello, Hub.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
Good. So what's not happening for the Bears?
Well, it's early. I don't know what's happening yet. I mean, everything you're getting now is leaks and reports and rumors, and I don't think that they have ever had a plan to be huge movers and shakers in free agency, if you will. But we're going to need, you know, another day or two. I do continue to hear that there are a few players that they do intend to be in on. But Ryan Pace told us at the Combine, you know, their focus is really more on the draft than it is on free agency. He has said it consistently all along. And, you know, at some point, we probably ought to believe him.
How do you look at free agency as a bellwether for the draft? Positionally, when you say if he's girding or finding depth at certain positions via free agency, do you check boxes and then look at what's open right before draft day?
Yeah, I think you absolutely do. You know, a lot of people were fooled last year when they signed Mike Glennon and said maybe not a quarterback, but it was always going to be a quarterback. You know, they were looking for the plan there. But then beyond that, when they brought in Quentin Demps and they had this big need at safety, they waited till the fourth round there. You know, you look at the other signings, they brought in the veteran Deion Sims and surprised us with Adam Shaheen. So actually, as we're talking through this, I'm realizing last year was a little bit of a fooler, but in prior years, you know, if they focus with a couple of big signings, in free agency, those are areas where they're probably not likely to at least, invest the high picks, you know, in the draft.
The Bears need a kicker, don't they?
Well, Cairo Santos is a free agent, so yes, they don't have one under contract. Now, my understanding is they'd like to have Santos back. I don't think that'll be a huge bidding war. There's a couple kids coming out this year who are pretty good. You know, maybe you take one in the seventh round, but that's risky at best, as we've seen in the past. So my guess is that there's conversation with Santos's agents, and they may be looking at a couple. There's always a ton of free agents on the market, so they're going to sign one. But I would assume it's probably going to be Cairo Santos.
That's funny because you could imagine that after all is said and done, if they are able to get themselves back on a competitive footing, no pun intended, the last thing you want is to have any of this undone by the kicking game. Because I wouldn't be able to live through that again, because I've seen it too many times where the best laid plans end up going awry as the clock hits zero.
Well, and it's interesting, Dan, I should add, you know, Patrick O'Donnell's a free agent too, so they need they need a kicker and a punter, but I'm assuming that they're going to re-sign O'Donnell. They're certainly not going to lose a bidding war on him. I mean, there isn't going to be a bidding war. You know, I think that Santos is a likely choice. But, yeah, you're right. You know, it's interesting. This goes all the way back to, I don't know if it was right when he was named, that Matt Nagy visited with you guys, but the question about is it fair to expect them to contend for the playoffs this year, and his answer was some form of, well, you know, maybe not completely, or maybe he just said no, I don't remember. And I think the way they're approaching this, having listened to him and Ryan Pace at the Combine, is I think they feel like they've got time. I mean, they're going to try and win as many games as they can this year, but they still are approaching this as if they're building the foundation of this football team, not so much as they're a couple players away.
I made the point earlier in the show that we look at this and we look at free agency as if it's all static and the Bears are operating in a vacuum and either the Bears get better or the Bears get worse. Meanwhile, rumors of Drew Brees being contacted by the Vikings, Kirk Cousins maybe being on the radar screen of the Vikings, Jimmy Graham potentially joining the Packers, and finally the Lions willing to address their glaring need at running back with maybe an established veteran. It's possible the Bears could do everything right and not gain on their main competition.
They could, you know, but again, I look at some of the young talent that was developing late last year, and I compare where the Lions and the Packers are, and I think that they're all trying to fix things. And you know, we're going to hear rumors everywhere. Everything I'm hearing is Jimmy Graham is most likely to end up in New Orleans. The Vikings are rumored with these quarterbacks because they have to be. They don't have one under contract, you know. And the Lions, I mean, basically they've kept Ziggy Ansah, which is nice. So I don't think anything's really changed as far as the Bears' place in the division. They you know, they're the last place team looking to gain on everybody else, you know, three of whom have been in the playoffs in the last 2 years. Can they make a big step? I think we all got thrown for a loop a little bit with the Josh Sitton release. Mm-hmm. You know, you knew Pernell McPhee was going. I didn't know Willie Young was going, and I don't know that I agree with that move, but I can't say that it's, you know, organizationally seismic or changing anything. So, you know, we'll see. I do think they're going to be a player for either Robinson or Watkins, and I hope it's Robinson because I think he's the better choice. I do think that they're going to, you know, one thing the Bears have done pretty well is mine that middle group of free agents, not the big name, big money guys, but good football players who are younger and are likely to play out their second contracts. That's what the Danny Trevathan signing was, the Deion Sims signing, Akeem Hicks signing, and there's a bunch of those guys in this free agent group. So I think that they're going to have to sign players. I mean, if nothing, you got to spend to the floor of the cap, and they just don't have enough of their own, you know, worth redoing deals on. So they will be active. There will be bodies coming in. I just don't think it's going to be a lot of the names that fans would like them to be focused on.
Where do you see Ndamukong Suh ending up as we find out his release is likely?
You know, I think that to a contender, I mean, this guy can still play. I did one of his games late, maybe the game they beat the Patriots, and he was absolutely the dominant player on the field. He's been remarkably durable. I think he's only missed a couple games in 8 years. He's 31 years old, and so somebody's going to have to pay more and do more years for a 31-year-old football player than they would normally like to do. But I would think that this is the perfect Jerry Jones type signing. Mm. You know, a huge need for them and one more problem in the locker room. It would be a typical New England Patriots signing. I wouldn't be surprised if they're in on Ndamukong Suh. He is from the Northwest, and apparently he was in Seattle yesterday morning for no reasons anybody was aware of. That would be unusual because the Seahawks appear to be cleaning out, not adding expensive veterans. But he'd certainly be a good fit with Pete Carroll. I think people are viewing Suh as a guy who, even though he's 31, he may be able to play at a Pro Bowl or All-Pro level for 2, 3, 4 more years. So that's going to be a big money deal.
Is Jay Cutler done?
He isn't if he doesn't want to be, but, you know, he said he wanted to be last year, and then it was, you know, allegedly his, quote, buddy Adam Gase who brought him back. Jay Cutler is still going to be better than some of the starting quarterbacks in the league this year and almost all of the backups. Now, is he interested in going to be a backup somewhere for $4 or $5 million? It seems to me like it's good work if he can get it. I don't know why you wouldn't want to be. There was talk last year about him, you know, promising to end his career so his wife could start hers. I have no idea what that dynamic is all about. But I know he is not, his representatives are not actively pursuing deals right now, but if he gets a call, I'm sure he'll listen just like he did last year.
And I wonder, when you mentioned that the Vikings don't have a quarterback under contract, if it's what, Bridgewater, Bradford, and Keenum are all available. So I wonder how teams view those guys relative to each other.
And I'm wrong about that. They had a kid last year too. They actually had four. Stroth, I can't remember his exact name, but it's a Division II type kid who's probably not the answer. I think the Vikings are focused on Kirk Cousins, and I think Kirk Cousins is focused on the Vikings. You can't rule out the Arizona Cardinals for lifestyle considerations and the fact that that is a really good defense. You can't rule out the New York Jets because they're going to throw a ton of money at them. But I don't think, from what I've heard, that Cousins needs that aggravation in that media market with a building team when he's going to be the highest paid player in football no matter who he signs with. Now, he may still leave a couple more million on the table in New York or Arizona to be with a team that can win a Super Bowl right now in Minnesota. But I think the Vikings are the front runner. And if not, I think they'd be pretty comfortable with Case Keenum, but they're not going to get into a bidding war for Case Keenum.
As I look at this list of quarterbacks, I'm also considering the fact that the Bears have a decision to make. Are they going to just keep two on the roster and have somebody caddying for Mitchell Trubisky? Or are informed by history to say, look, maybe we need somebody who can go in and run the same stuff and give our offense an opportunity to work, especially as we're installing a bunch of new stuff. Do you bring back Mark Sanchez? Because there might be a couple names on here, and I don't know how much money the Bears have allotted to the position and how seriously they take the role of backup now with everything so Trubisky-centric on everything that they're doing.
Well, and I can tell you they have very little money allotted to the position by NFL standards. I mean, even though Mitch is the number two player taken last year and is a very wealthy rookie, I think he's only going to count about $7 or $8 million against the cap this year, and that's nothing for quarterbacks. So I think they're going to bring Sanchez back if they can because they really like him, and I think they're going to draft one. I think that in this case that Ryan Pace is going to be as good as his word. It'll happen later in the draft. But if you have a veteran, you know, backup that you trust in a Mark Sanchez, and then you get a youngster who you like a lot, by year two, you plug him in. If you can trust him as a backup, then you've got a four-year stretch here where you're way under the cap value at that position, and it allows you to do other things.
Were you surprised by the Bradley Soule commitment, or did he prove enough versatility that he can just be a something for you as a reserve lineman?
No, I think he's a good signing. I mean, you know, he started at both tackle and guard for him. I don't think you'd want him to have to start a season at tackle. He didn't do badly at guard those last two games of the season. I actually thought that the focus might have been more on Tom Compton, who got more starts at guard and seemed more comfortable there. I wouldn't be surprised if they re-sign him, too. But the Soule signing makes sense. He's still, I think, 27 or 28. So he's a good fit with this group, and you know, it's nice insurance.
A lot of people were aghast that Josh Bellamy received that tender, but I think that's a special teams guy, that he's viewed as having some veteran value there, as long as you're not asking him to catch too many passes.
Well, it is, and all three of them, you know, Josh and Bryce Callahan and Cameron Meredith got the lowest tenders you can get. So all you're doing is protecting yourself to make sure that if somebody did want to throw a contract at them as restricted free agents, that you'd get something in return. It still doesn't mean Josh Bellamy makes the football team at the end of training camp. Although I suspect he will, because he's a really good special teams player. But that tender is not about Josh Bellamy being part of their wide receiver plans, whereas they clearly think Callahan, if he can stay healthy, can be the nickel. Mm-hmm. And Meredith, they're hoping, is going to be their number two.
Wow. And I focus on tight end only because Matt Nagy's offense seems to really need a tight end that can do more than just inline block and do more than just try to get down the field, that there are a lot of routes on that tree for the tight end. And Shaheen is the one, but Daniel Brown is not going to be re-signed. It looks like Sims is going to be gone. I don't know what this group thinks of Broniker. Do you think that there is going to be like the kid from the Eagles who would?
I'd keep a real close eye on him because he is a perfect fit. Obviously, you know, he's in Doug Peterson's offense, which is a version of what Matt Nagy is going to have a version of what he did. Mm-hmm. So that's a guy I would keep an eye on. You know, Adam Shaheen, while he may become a very good NFL tight end, stylistically is not the guy you're describing. He's still not going to be, you know, a Travis Kelce type, who is more receiver than blocker. You're hoping he can be a real red zone threat. You hope he can be very productive, but with his size and bulk, he's going to be an inline blocker as well, and he's not a guy who's ever going to split a seam or take a top off a defense. So they do need another pass catching tight end, and Burton's a guy to keep an eye on. The other guy, you know, who's a free agent is Tyler Eifert, mm-hmm. who is a Pro Bowler, but I mean, you can't keep him on the football field. So how much money are you going to spend in free agency on a guy with his injury history?
We're going to do more with Hub after a brief break. There's other stuff going on around the NFL football talk at the start of the free agency negotiating period. The segment brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist to get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. Talking Bears, talking NFL with Hub. Keep it here and Bert Sittingoff on the Score. Talking football with Hub, and I didn't think we would get to this point for some reason other than to make fun of them, but since we last talked, how about those Cleveland Browns?
You know, I mean, it's interesting what happens when you have a professional running your football organization, and John Dorsey's really good. Now, let me backtrack for 1 second. I think I misspoke at the top of the show with those tenders on Callahan and Meredith and Bellamy. I said that at least they'd get some compensation. In fact, you do not get compensation with the tenders that the Bears put on them. All you do is get a guaranteed right to match at $1.9
million. Okay.
And so it really does. It's a little, I don't know why you would do that with Josh Bellamy. I get why you do it with Meredith and Callahan, but the Bellamy one's a little surprising. At any rate, you know, you look at what Cleveland has done, and the bottom line is that they're all, I think, pretty solid football moves. Yep. I mean, you know, Tyrod Taylor is not there to be their quarterback for any more than maybe this year, but the ability to bring him in and have a weapon that will scare people a little bit on offense, and then to trade DeShone Kizer and get a starting cornerback in Demaryius Randall, it's pretty interesting. You know, they're still loaded with draft capital. I like pretty much all the moves that they've made so far. John Dorsey has been around the block a few times. This is the guy who built the Chiefs. He was instrumental in building the Packers. And if I'm a Browns fan, somebody asked me the other day, should Browns fans be excited? That's a little early, but I would be encouraged for sure, because I don't have a problem with any of the things he's done so far.
Why has trade activity picked up in general, almost now commensurate to other sports where we expect more of it?
You know, Dan, I don't have an absolute answer, but I have a theory. I think it's because about 4 or 5 years ago, Bill Belichick started doing it, and then Howie Roseman followed him, and you look at the results, and it's always been a copycat league, you know, and you see suddenly teams are being successful with it, so now everybody's going to jump in and give it a shot, and I think it'll probably continue for a while. Some teams will make some mistakes, and then they may back off. The thing that is interesting, though, is that when you look at what you get in a lot of these drafts in return, when you give up valuable assets, it's still not much. I mean, you know, Randall for Kizer, maybe these are a couple players you're not sure of. But you look at this trade that's reported now with Buffalo and Cincinnati. Supposedly Cincinnati's getting Cordy Glenn, and Buffalo is giving them Cordy Glenn and a fifth-round pick for Cincinnati's sixth-round pick and a swap of ones, so to move from 21 to 12. Now, I understand why they're moving up to 12. It probably puts them in position to move up again, but Cordy Glenn is a Pro Bowl left tackle. I mean, you would think he'd have more value than just a swap of eight spots or whatever it is in the first round.
Well, the Bears should be on the phone then if they want to get up to eight.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I think it's interesting the way this is developing. The thing that is the hardest to figure out, when you look at these quarterbacks, everybody is reacting to what they heard at the end of 2016 and 2017. Oh, the 18 class is going to be legendary. It's a bad class, and none of these kids, off what they did in college football in 2017, are going to be graded or should be graded anywhere near as highly as a Marcus Mariota or a Jameis Winston or a Carson Wentz or a Jared Goff. Mm. Now, you look at Mitch Trubisky, and you didn't know much about Trubisky. He went 2, But look what happened to Mahomes and Watson, who dropped down to 10 and 12. And Mahomes and Watson were both better prospects than any of these kids. And so even though I know you keep seeing these mocks with four of them in the top 10, and it may happen because quarterbacks get overdrafted, realistically, there shouldn't be more than one or two of these guys in the top 10. Now, that's what happened last year. If it happens again this year, you got Cincinnati sitting at 12. They may not have to move that much higher. But at 8, I think the Bears are going to be getting phone calls.
Did you see the chilling story that Sports Business Journal ran about a large story about the relationship between the NFL and ESPN and how that the feelings there are not good for a lot of reasons? And the takeaway that I came away with was that the league doesn't quite seem to understand where a news gathering operation starts and ends and a marketing agreement and promotional agreement exists. Because it seems like the NFL is going out of their way to use business pressure to keep ESPN from reporting any negative news about the league, whether it's Jerry Jones, whether it's what's happening with the Patriots, or certainly a traumatic brain injury. And it was a little scary to think that the NFL really wants to influence pedal that specifically and that powerfully.
Yeah, I did not see the story, but it's interesting because it's consistent with something else that did happen at the Super Bowl, actually, that really kind of stunned me. You know, they announced this deal with Fox for the Thursday night broadcast,
yes.
And the money they got was silly compared to what everybody expected. But part of the deal was they took playoff games away from ESPN and gave them to Fox.
That's part of this report, too, yes.
And I'm thinking, well, how do you get away with that? You know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, because when ESPN re-upped on Monday night, we were stunned at what they paid. And A, who's the dummy that left the out in the contract that allows the league to do that? Because apparently they can. And clearly the league doesn't care much what ESPN thinks, because those playoff games are invaluable. And I was really stunned when I saw that it happened.
Yeah, they were really coming after him hard. It started to sour with the Playmakers series that they had on. They thought painted the league in a negative light. And it's one thing to air a fictional series, but it got to the point where they were angry with Outside the Lines. They were angry with Don Van Natta Jr. They were angry about reporting on lawsuits, on head injuries, etc., that they feel that any kind of partnership must also be sort of a public relations partnership. And it was scary stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, clearly it can't be that way, and we don't want to launch into a whole thing about society in general right now in the media, but, you know, we have to remember that their other partners are all pretty significant news-gathering organizations as well, but because they have other topics to focus on besides sports, you know, they're not going to get in as deep as ESPN is, so I can see why it's happening, but, I mean, ESPN, it's an interesting dynamic, because ESPN, being all sports, it's not like they can just say, okay, screw you, and walk away from football or the NFL, you know, so I guess the NFL sees where it has some leverage, and it's troublesome to me that they would do what they're doing, but I guess I can see why they think they can get away with it.
Hub, thanks for joining us.
All right, take care, Dan.
Great question here from the 708. Did ESPN ask ABC to table that episode of Black-ish about players taking a knee at the anthem? I did read that story that there was an episode that was either written or filmed involving that subject. And you're right, that is ABC, that is Disney, that is the same thing. We certainly can't rule it out. You know, that would sound probable, if not possible, at this point. I also wanted to recap something we discussed last week. If you remember, Joe Sheehan talked about the White Sox, and we read his breakdown and his feelings about the White Sox and had the idea and gave us the idea to talk about it. He said that the White Sox would be on his list to choose if you had to watch one team for 162 games outside of your favorite team or one of this year's Big Seven contenders. So not your team, not the contenders. Which team would you choose? And he said a bunch of people responded, many with more than just one selection, but one team dominated the proceedings. So he has the results for the teams that were either the sole mentioned or the first of a group. And he said there were two Phillies votes that came in before the Jake Arrieta signing. If you remember, it was Jason who said the Angels because of Shohei Ohtani and everything else that they have happening there. I said the Brewers would be my team because they seem dynamic and interesting and on the come. The Angels dominated the voting here They got, of these per these parameters, they had 14. Then as a drop-off, the Brewers were 3. Padres, Phillies, White Sox, 2. And then there were 7 teams tied with 1. And he said the Angels clearly have the most going for them with this group. Mike Trout's the best player in baseball. Shohei Ohtani's the biggest on-field story in baseball. Albert Pujols versus time and how Mike Socha referees that bout may develop into a huge storyline. The level of consensus was astounding. And then he admits, he said, my pick would have been the Braves. So he didn't pick the White Sox after all. He says the young core of Ronald Acuna, Ozzy Albies, and Dansby Swanson, exciting, could drive a surprise run. The Braves were the team I wanted to see blow some money on starting pitchers, because even an average rotation might have pushed them into the wild card chase behind that young group. With the Braves just a line item on the balance sheet of Liberty Media, it was silly to expect that kind of investment, especially given their aging ballparks. So I can see them being a very attractive watch, particularly in the second half, as some of their young starting pitchers get promoted. So he said, if you consider every team that got a mention, the standings were Angels with 15, Milwaukee 7, Braves with 5, Phillies and White Sox each with 4, Cardinals, Mets, Padres, and Twins with 3, the A's and Reds with 2 each, and Colorado, Pittsburgh, and Toronto each with 1. He said, take out the top 7 teams in baseball, and the next most interesting are the 2 wildcard contenders who did the most to excite their fan bases this winter. It's almost as if, he concludes, trying to win matters. So beyond that, you got 3 rebuilders putting a lot of young talent on the field of the Braves, Phillies, and White Sox. He said the 9 teams of the 23 that might have been, which didn't get mentioned at all, and if you are smarter than I and you were able to do this through deduction, Rays, Orioles, Tigers, Royals, Rangers, Mariners, Marlins, Diamondbacks, Giants. So some of those are obvious, but to me the Rangers are a surprise in that group given their young hitting talent. Rangers are another team, though, that took the winter off. So a conclusion to what we had talked about last week on the show. Coming up in just a moment, it is going to be Lawrence Holmes. He has the proverbial full broat from 6 to 10. So we'll say good evening to him next on The Score.
All right. We got a full broat.
This segment sponsored by CeCe's. New crust, new sauce, New York-style pizza. Now at CeCe's, grab an extra large slice of their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's so much to love in the buffet for just 5 and change. Only at CeCe's. Prices vary. Restrictions apply. Transition brought to you by Aloha Restoration. Restoring your home to pre-disaster condition. Long form Lawrence Holmes tonight. What's happening?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The show tonight has got a lot of interesting moving parts to it. Barry Rosner is going to be on the show.
Golf?
Yes. Good. We're going to talk Tiger Woods. And I can't tell you all of the conversation that Barry and I had today on the phone, but I will tell you that he was pantsless while watching Tiger Woods yesterday.
Who wasn't?
So we're going to – I'm serious, though. Like, he's literally pantsless. So we'll talk about that with him. It's going to be a lot of fun. Then I want to talk about the effect of someone who is that great.
We spent a lot of time on that today.
And what it does to you as a viewer, I watch a little bit of golf, but ordinarily I use it to fall asleep to. And I don't mean that as a diss to golf. It's just perfect conditions for you're laying on your couch, like they're kind of quiet. You hear the birds in the background.
Birds, yeah.
You hear the water and you're done. You know, there's a 30-minute nap right there. But yesterday I was kind of going throughout the house, making sure that I was updated on what was happening and whether or not Tiger was going to be able to pull that off. So I want to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. 8 o'clock, Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk is going to join me. We're going to have a long conversation about NFL tampering / free agency, throwing some Bears talk and a little bit about the draft as well. I had an incredible interview with Dante Ingram from Loyola, and I don't think enough people heard it. I'm bringing it. I mean, I'm so happy for them. Like, this is great. Like,
they're doing it right. I mentioned earlier, and it's not a large athletic department, but this is the time of year where you staff up and you give every one of your assistant SIDs a cell phone, and every interview request is yes.
Yeah.
Because this is that you cannot replicate this advertising and this platform. And the players have all been, everyone that I've heard, you know, I heard Clayton Custer, I heard Ingram, I've heard Porter Moser multiple times, that they're saying yes to every interview, and it's the best thing you can do for your program.
It's nice. And it's nice to live right here for now. Once we get to Thursday, and they're one of the first games, aren't they? Thursday, like 2 o'clock or whatever.
Right, it can end like that.
Right, and it could be over. But the ride that they've gone on to be Valley regular season champs to the Valley champs in the tournament, and now them having an opportunity, they can beat Miami. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Miami on Thursday night. But it's just great. It ends up being a good story. So we're going to do that, and then we're all going to go through the brackets. I'm a little afraid because Shane printed out 10 brackets.
You had me at Shane and afraid.
And there's like five of us that are going to be here, but he says whatever. He's helping the planet with the weird produce that he gets or something like that. So the show is a lot. Plus, I don't know if you saw it. I retweeted it yesterday. The conversation that Eno Saris and Brian Kenny had. Oh, my God.
Two really smart baseball guys.
I think that Eno Saris is the coolest and most interesting guy covering baseball, period, paragraph. He and Brian Kenny were talking about some of the new technology that's on the way in baseball, and it's sexy baseball talk. So I pulled a little chunk of it, and we're going to do that. So there's a lot to do on tonight's show.
I think you would have appreciated some of the discussion we were having when doing transition with the midday guys about Tiger Woods. And I kept thinking this as I was watching him, is that he is the latest installment of a classic version of the hero myth or mono myth. And when you start bringing up some of these accessible examples of Luke Skywalker, of Neo from The Matrix, of Katniss Everdeen from Hunger Games, of Simba in The Lion King, Odysseus, and some would say even Christ or Moses, the idea of a hero having to deal with conflict and or temptation.
The trial of a hero.
Being exiled to a dark place, going to the abyss.
Jesus in the desert.
And then or Luke Skywalker on Dagobah, or Harry Potter out in the forest. Literally, where Tiger
Neo
Woods,
being blinded.
Yeah, where
literally in a dark place.
Tiger Woods went to one of the darkest personal places we've seen. You know, his marriage is over. His children are estranged. He's publicly shamed and crying in front of his mother. Knee surgeries, back surgeries, rehab for opiate addiction, arrested for DWI. And then there's, as part of the myth, there's a reconciliation with a father figure or the gods. In this case, could be the literal dealings that he had in his mind with his father and the stuff he was doing with the Navy SEALs and trying to always be working toward an image of what his father was making him to be. And then there is a redemption of the remade hero returning as something new and different and wiser. And I'm watching all this yesterday. I'm like, you couldn't write this.
Well, you could write it, but no one would greenlight it.
Right. I mean, it's a classic comic book trope.
It's great. I wonder if that was enough. And then maybe this is one of the things we'll talk about. That you had your moment. You had your Tiger can still play moment. And was that sufficient for all of those that wanted a different ending? And maybe like another person that we can put into this is Derrick Rose. Where there are the people that still have that, I want to see Derrick Rose be great one more time.
Yeah, it's not an individual sport, and it's...
It looks like the game, the way the game is played, has passed by what he can do, has passed by what he is skilled at, or was skilled at doing.
Yep, his inefficiency is now a bigger burden than it was before.
When we talked about him not being able to shoot three-pointers back then, it wasn't that big of a deal because he was exploding over people to the basket. And now that is not the case. I was surprised, though. He got a nice hand when he checked into the game yesterday.
Matt Ginella of Golf Channel was with us earlier today, and I was surprised that he thinks this last 5 weeks of Tiger Woods is not only not enough, he's full bore believing in the chase for Jack Nicklaus again.
Wow.
That's what he said. He said that it's not just yesterday. It's not just this round. He said it's the data. It's his swing velocity.
Swing rate was real fast yesterday.
It's everything he's been watching that he said he's buying Tiger stock in the Jack chase again.
That's okay. I found myself being satisfied yesterday. I was like, oh man, I remember this. This was fun. This is I'm not a golf fan. I respect what those guys do, and I actually really like talking. When I've had the opportunity to talk with golfers, I find them interesting. And the people who cover golf are great.
It is the best broadcast of any American sport.
I agree. And I think the best athletes to talk to are racers. Like NASCAR racers are really good to talk to. Mm-hmm. But anyone around golf, I've enjoyed. But yesterday, I mean, I blocked time. And I said, I'm watching this. I want to see if his short game holds up the way that it had for the first three rounds. I want to see if he can stay greens in regulation. And he had hit seven straight at one point. I want to see how the other people react to it. How all of these kids, the children of Tiger that are all now out there on the golf course, do they really have a concept of what it was like? Because there was one point yesterday where Tiger tees off and he heads up and he heads to his second shot. And the gallery left. So the next group, even the announcers were like, where is everybody? They're with Tiger.
They're over there.
They're with that guy. And I don't know if any of these kids, even when, you know, Jordan Spieth was just playing incredible golf, I don't know if that was going on. People were sticking around like, I'll check out what's going on with Dustin Johnson or I'll do this or that. The gallery left. He walked up the course and the gallery went with him. That shows you the tremendous power of Tiger Woods on all of us as sports fans and on golf fans in particular.
There's no story like this. This would be, and maybe already is, one of the great comebacks we've ever seen. If he wins a tournament, if he wins a major, this is peerless as far as its size and meaning.
Well, and he knows Augusta really well. It plays to his strengths. Uh-huh. And you got to believe that. You look at the numbers that popped off, that popped off ratings-wise yesterday. There's clearly a Tiger effect. And now if you're CBS and what ESPN gets, they get the first two rounds. Is that what happens? They got to be just like, this is great. Phil just won. Tiger was in contention. They're both going to be at the Masters. It's ratings gold.
It's right now, it is a great sport. I mean, it's always, I enjoy watching golf more than most people because, like I say, I think the quality, the overall level of the quality of broadcasting is the highest of any sport. But right now, there's something compelling every single time.
So we got everything on the show tonight. College basketball in a lot of different areas, college basketball.
Yeah, we had some DePaulia writers on the show today. Enjoyed our conversation.
They did some very fine reporting from what I saw. I highly recommend that everyone read their piece and then make up their own mind about it. I've got some thoughts that I'd like to share a little bit later on in the show. Basketball talk, baseball talk, NFL talk, and Tiger talk. Everything you need on tonight's show, all in 4 hours, coming up next.
We thank the DePaulias, Jonathan Ballou and Shane Renee, for joining us. Matt Janella from Golf Channel, Jordan Stone on college basketball, and Hub Arkish. Our video director was Brian Gertsch.
I'm standing there and there's all kind of stuff around and
what kind of stuff?
Blood and stuff around. You know, I hate to say this, but this is like, but
that was like the Hub Arkish giggle he's got going there.
There was never ever any real closure on the possibility that he shot someone in Philadelphia.
Thinking alike. Producer Nick Shepkowski.
What's Syracuse called? What's their nickname? The Orange.
Orange.
The is,
orange.
That the, is that the same orange as we're seeing with the beavers here? I've never seen an orange beaver.
And nice inside.
You're not looking hard enough. The audio overlord, Chris Tannehill.
Luis Robert got a hooker and just buried it out there.
Wow. It's good to be the king. All right, we'll talk tomorrow. Keep it here for Lawrence. Bye.
I want you to know it's over.
Well, bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.